number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Click and Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act.
Leg a dime, smack on the ankle.
Nighttime is the right time.
You know the night
it's Tony
time.
D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio.
Is now.
Cold got to be.
This is what we do.
From the Quick and Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
Oh, so close, Buffalo, so close. Monday Night Football. The New England Patriots beat the Buffalo Bills. And they were right there. But you know what? Like anybody else that plays the New England Patriots, here's what you got to do when you play the New England Patriots. You can't make mistakes. They're too good of a team. You're not going to be able to have personal foul penalties. You're not going to be able to have fumbled punt returns. You're not going to be able to have illegal formations that get called, drop touchdown passes. You're not going to be able to have those things against the New England Patriots. Not in all of those things in order to beat the Patriots. Sure, Buffalo gave New England a lot tonight. And in a lot of ways, you could look at this game and say, gee, a play here or there, a bad miscue here or there, when Buffalo wins this game. I never like going down that what-if road, because the reality of it is the Patriots are very good at responding to whatever you throw at them. So never fall into the trap of saying, well, if they had just done this early in the game, that would have gotten them the win. Patriots would have figured out a way to do something. That's what they do. But this was a game where if you were looking for that, where is the break in the Patriots' run here, this could have been it. This had the potential to be it. But like I said, you can't make mistakes, and the Bills made a ton of them. But nevertheless, they were tough. They tried to get to Brady. They rushed him a number of times in this game, but it's not the key to winning against Tom Brady. But if that's what you do best, you might as well go at it. And they did. Patriots had suffered an injury. Danny Amendola got hurt. So this was a game in which the Bills had an opening, but just couldn't close the deal. What does this do for Buffalo? Well, it does put them at 5-5 in a very, very crowded wild card field. And what does this do for New England? Well, this was a game in which you knew the opponent was targeting you specifically because it's a division game. And especially how much Rex Ryan wants to beat the New England Patriots. It was that kind of battle that you're going to have with a team that's prepared to play you, tried to execute a lot of things it does right. You're fighting a lot of injuries, both on the offensive line without Julian Edelman. Danny Amendola, as I said earlier, gets hurt. Some defensive players are out. And the Patriots come through again and now are 10-0. Are they a weaker 10-0? Well, injuries don't help. But are they a team that is resilient enough to capitalize whenever you make a mistake? That is the key tonight. That's the key takeaway from this Patriots team. This wasn't their best outing. It wasn't Brady's best performance by any means. It wasn't the team's best performance by any means. But it was one of those wins where if you're getting the best shot from an opponent and that opponent continues to make a few mistakes, then you've got to win the game, and the Patriots win the game. You may not like how they did it or all the ways that the New England Patriots looked in doing it. But nevertheless, they're 10-0. Our telephone number, 800-777-2907. Coming up, bottom of the hour, our guest tonight will be Jordan Bianchi from SB Nation, as we'll wrap up the NASCAR season with Kyle Busch winning the championship. We'll talk about him. We'll talk about some of the other controversies throughout the season and the career of Jeff Gordon that's coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll put a bow on that season. But I want to get into the NFL Week 11, because there's a lot of storylines that we talked about yesterday, but then you get a full day of analysis and a full day of people being able to respond from what they saw on Sunday, and especially the pundits, especially media, especially guys in the organizations on a number of issues, including what's going on with Denver with the quarterback situation, what's going on in St. Louis with the concussion in their quarterback situation. So we'll get to those things coming up next. 800-777-2907. We'll also get into the college football playoff committee rankings, because those are coming out on Tuesday, and they're going to be big, because with the shakeup that we saw over the weekend, Is Alabama going to be number one? Probably not, but they're going to be right on the doorstep. What about how far does Ohio State fall? Where is Iowa? Does Notre Dame still hold on after that close win at Boston College? What do you do with Oklahoma? Where do they fit in? So there's a lot of question marks. Again, it's not going to be the final one. And as we saw last year with the playoff committee, they're likely to scrap the whole thing and reseed this stuff at the end of the year anyway. But at least we're going to get an indication on some of those questions coming up on Tuesday. So we'll explore that a little bit next hour. Pete Futek is going to join us from collegefootballnews.com and campusinsiders.com to help us get an idea of what's going on there, including the rumors about Les Miles at LSU. So we got a full show tonight. But coming up next, did the Rams blow it with Case Keenum? They certainly did. What did the NFL respond? How did they respond to that? And what about Brock Osweiler and the Denver Broncos? Do they have their man going forward? That's coming up next. It is Tony D. Herl and I, Tim, on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D. on the third shift.
It's Tony D. with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. So week 11 is now in the books in the National Football League. So yesterday, the St. Louis Rams-Baltimore Ravens game. I don't know if you had a chance to see this, but boy, it's really getting a lot of buzz today. Case Keenum of the St. Louis Rams goes hard to the ground and bangs the back of his head on the turf. He stays in the game and two plays later has a fumble that sets the Ravens up for their game-winning field goal. Now, why is this a big deal? It's a big deal because the way the NFL has been selling safety and selling their reaction to concussions. And it needs to be a prime example of how not to act when a quarterback slams his head or gets his head slammed to the turf, like Case Keenum did in that game against the Ravens. The NFL is pitching this hard. They understand this is one of the overriding concerns that is going to help to hurt their league in the long term. CTE is a major problem. All the research is showing that this is an issue for the league. Heck, they've got this Will Smith movie coming out that nobody wants you to see. But the NFL has been promoting via a variety of different avenues. I mean, as I said yesterday, they were on 60 Minutes. Peter Berg has done a piece for HBO Sports on the NFL and how it's handling safety and how it's handling head trauma and how it trickles down to the Pop Warner League so that they can make the game much more safer so that, you know, moms will finally will let their kids play and the numbers may start climbing back in youth football. But the way they did this in St. Louis, or in Baltimore, I should say, for St. Louis, was not a prime example of how this is supposed to go down. Case Keenum hit his head. Anybody watching it on TV saw it. The announcers even made the comment. And yet no one in the NFL who's paid to be there to monitor these kind of things acted. The trainer didn't go out. The people who are in charge of watching this and have the power to stop the game did nothing. So what do we take from this? There has to be an active measure by the NFL to look into this. And I know they said that they will, but there absolutely has to, they have to be forefront on this. Because you need, as a player, to be able to trust that these protocols are going to be in place. If you're in the players' union, and you have been pushing this league to acknowledge head trauma, to acknowledge that this game can be made safer with a couple of more protocols, then you owe it to yourself as a union to go to the league and say, why wasn't this done? Where did it fall apart? Where did you guys get trapped so we can make sure this doesn't happen? In the speed of the game, we understand quick decisions have to be made, but we are putting the health of our players in the hands of people on the sidelines with the teams and up in the booth that are watching for this thing. And nobody acted. Nobody did. And I hope that this is something that the league does take a hard look at. Because they couldn't get Case Keenum off the ground. He's on the ground, and he's woozy, and he's wobbling, and they could barely get him up, and yet there he goes into the huddle. And two plays later, there he goes fumbling the football. The Rams could have cost themselves a game here by not acting appropriately. There was one shot of Nick Foles running to get his helmet. And yet they left a woozy quarterback in the game because either nobody felt it was necessary to get him out of that game, or nobody had the guts to go out and stop the game so that he could come out or be looked at. It's not the finest hour by the NFL. And listen, I know mistakes are made. Everybody's human, and I understand that. So this isn't one of those, the NFL made a mistake here. But part of making mistakes is learning from them, and I want the NFL to learn from this. Because just sitting in my couch, I knew what was going on. I knew what was happening. And yet, some people in that stadium did not. All right, as to the other play on the field, the Denver Broncos are going with Brock Osweiler at quarterback, New England Patriots. No surprise there, given that Peyton Manning is still getting second opinions on his foot. But do the Denver Broncos have their guy now? That's really the question. Do they have their guy now? This whole season has been nothing more than Peyton Manning trying his hardest to get adapted to an offense that's not exactly his style. And for anybody who says, well, Peyton Manning is an adaptable quarterback, you are 100% right. He certainly is. But for some reason, this didn't flow. The Gary Kubiak offense didn't flow. Now, you can argue all day and night about the Kubiak offense, whether or not it's going to be effective, whether or not the Broncos down the road are going to be able to win a Super Bowl using this style of play. All of that's neither here nor there. Because as of right now, the Denver Broncos have hired Gary Kubiak to be the head coach of the football team. So they are in on his system. He's not hiding it. He's not changing it at the last minute. He likes a balanced attack, more run, quarterback that can move around the pocket a bit, and that's Brock Osweiler. So this isn't going to be Brock Osweiler leading the Broncos to victories. It is about Gary Kubiak's offense leading the Broncos to victory and the fact that it is run better with Osweiler at quarterback. So this is not a surprise that he's playing on Sunday against the Patriots. That was a given the injury. What I'm looking forward to seeing is how the Broncos react when Peyton Manning is cleared to play and how reluctantly they are going to want to go back to Manning at quarterback, which I thought I would never say in 1,000 years, given that Brock Osweiler was such an incredible unknown. Now, I'm putting the cart before the horse here. I'm assuming that this is just going to be a smooth offense that's just going to be able to do what it wants, and that Osweiler is not going to be called to really go out there and do anything spectacular. And the Patriots are on the schedule, for crying out loud. All of this is under the idea that X plus Y equals Z, so if you've got a quarterback that can run the Kubiak system and the Kubiak system is running, that the Denver Broncos will win games. I don't know if this is true. I still think the Bears blew that game against the Broncos on Sunday. I still think it was more of a John Fox error than anything the Broncos did, and they did exactly what they were supposed to do. But I think the Bears should have won that game. I think this was more on the line of the Bears failing to, A, kick a field goal with 10 minutes left, just to keep that, you know, take an opportunity to get points when you can in this league. You should always do that. And I thought what happened at the end of that game and the two-point conversion was just off. Somebody made a wrong call, whether it was Cutler at the line of scrimmage or that was the play call, whatever. It just wasn't the right call to run at that particular time. So the Broncos didn't blow out the Bears on the road, but they were efficient. I don't want to see Peyton Manning go out like this. I don't. I don't want my last memory of Peyton Manning to be a 4-interception game against the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't. But I honestly can't imagine a scenario other than the Broncos losing game after game after game of Peyton Manning getting a job back in a Gary Kubiak offense if this quarterback continues to play this way in the system. He's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the greatest of all time. But let's be honest, he is not the quarterback for what Gary Kubiak wants to do. As much as we said all offseason that these two guys will come together and form a perfect union, it has not been a perfect union. Manning has looked old. He's looked confused at times. He's thrown some bad passes. They have lacked zip. All of these things. He's been hurt. All those things are been recognized as to be true. And if this kid is running the system the way it's supposed to be run, wins or not, if it gives them the best chance to win games, then they're going to stick with this 25-year-old kid over the future Hall of Famer legend Peyton Manning, because Manning this year has been a problem for the Denver Broncos offense, even though they went off to a 7-0 start. I again, don't want to see this go down for Manning, but I can't imagine it other than complete failure by Brock Osweiler. So the Broncos may have their guy, and this may actually open them up a lot better down the road. Look, they've got a defense that can shut down anybody, but they didn't have an offense that was able to separate themselves from anybody who was able to manage to put points on the board. The Broncos so many times this year needed interception return for a touchdown, fumble pickup for a touchdown, turnovers to give you good field position, et cetera, et cetera. What had been stalling Denver or putting these games closer than they should have been was the offense wasn't doing their job. If this offense finds a groove and the defense does what it's been doing, they're just as formidable, if not more, than they were when Manning led them to a 7-0 start. Now I'm really interested in how this is going to go down on Sunday with the Patriots. All right, 800-777-2907, the number. If you'd like to join us on the show tonight, Jordan Bianchi is going to join us next from SB Nation as we talk NASCAR. Kyle Busch is the Sprint Cup champion. Jeff Gordon made his final ride in a storybook career. We had the controversy of the Joey Logano-Matt Kenseth feud during the playoffs. We'll get to all of that as we kind of put a bow on the NASCAR season with Jordan Bianchi coming up and his thoughts on where the sport is heading and where it has gone, especially with Jeff Gordon, because this is a guy that when he has been in a 20-plus year career has seen this sport just take off. How much is he responsible for that? A lot? Somewhat? We'll ask Jordan Bianchi next. You can also hit us up on Twitter, and we hope you will, at Tony D Radio. And you can also like us on Facebook, Tony D Radio Show, where you can communicate with us, let us know that you're out there, because we certainly would like to say hi. Jordan Bianchi from SB Nation coming up next. It's Tony D here in the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio. And yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, so the NASCAR season has come to an end, and we're going to wrap it up with Jordan Bianchi again, SB Nation, as Kyle Busch has won the championship, and it was also the final ride for Jeff Gordon as we go back on the 2015 season. How are you, Jordan?
I'm doing well, and it has been quite a season, that's for sure.
All right, so Kyle Busch wins the championship, and he missed the first 11 races with the broken leg. So I want to ask you about what he had to do to win this championship.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things he had to do. The first thing, he had to get healthy. You know, as you said, he broke his leg, broke his foot in that Daytona crash, and there was serious question whether he was going to come back, not even this year, whether he was going to come back. I mean, yes, at some point he was going to get healthy enough to be behind the wheel again, but was he going to be the same driver? That we, no one knew. You know, at best case scenario, doctors thought he might be back end of August, early September sometime. You know, Busch himself thought, you know, was kind of targeting a mid-July date. He ended up coming back in mid-May, went through a very, very rigorous rehab to come back, very painful. He talks about it and says, you know, he's going through that session and he, you know, almost blacked out numerous times and the pain was so grueling. Comes back, and then he wins races. He wins 4 to 5 races in June and July, puts himself in a position to qualify for NASCAR's playoffs. And then once the playoffs started, it was really the antithesis of what we've seen from Busch in past years. A mature racer, didn't make mistakes, exercised a lot of patience, and really had some luck kind of go his way as well. and that hasn't happened in years past, and he put himself in a position to capitalize on Sunday in the final race of the year, and that's exactly what he did on a final restart and took the lead and held off Kevin Harvick, the defending series champion, to take the championship himself.
Something we were talking about yesterday. So he misses the first 11 races of the season. There's this rule that says you have to start all these races in order to qualify for the championship. They give him a waiver. Now, the rule that was in place, that wasn't intended for injuries, right? That was more intended for some other sort of nefarious implication. What was the intent of the rule?
It was a little bit of injury, actually. And the thing is over the years, you know, going way back, you know, Richard Petty once raced with a broken neck. We've seen drivers put themselves behind the wheel of a race car that shouldn't have been there before. There was, Davey Allison in 1992 once had to literally Velcro his hand to the gear shifter so he could stay in the race car and shift gears. He was that badly injured. You know, at some point, you know, as we've seen in other sports now, NFL, for example, injuries have come to the forefront, and NASCAR is no different. And the fact is that drivers were kind of sacrificing themselves because they had to start races to win the championship, and it was unsafe. It was a practice that should have been prohibited a long time ago. And NASCAR, with their new playoff format that was introduced last year, had an opportunity to kind of correct that, and they did. And if a driver gets injured, we've seen it numerous times the last couple of years. Denny Hamlin missed a couple races, Brian Vickers, and now Kyle Busch. They are, they can get that waiver that says, you can miss this weekend. Now, they still have to go out and perform. They still have to, finish top 30 in the points, and they're still going to have to win a races. So while they get that waiver, it's still a performance-based clause there. And it does give them a little bit of latitude to say, you know what, hey, I'm not healthy enough to be behind the race car. This is unsafe. I'm going to sit out this weekend.
So was the rule in place to prevent people from going, I've already clinched with a win, I'm already clinched a spot in the playoff, I don't want to race at these big tracks, or I don't want to race at this particular track, I'm taking the weekend off?
That's exactly it. I mean, NASCAR realizing that, hey, we want these drivers to be smart and not race when they're hurt. Also, that being said, we don't want this to turn into the PGA Tour, for example, where our star drivers are only making a few token appearances until, and kind of circling the big events. We want our stars there every week, and this is their caveat to say, hey, you're going to need to race all 36 races. Now, we understand there's going to be exceptions that are going to come up throughout the year, but we're going to need you there every week. So that's kind of how they ensure that drivers show up week in and week out.
All right, so was this at the time when they were giving Kyle Busch the waiver, it wasn't a controversial move? Because I could imagine a driver saying, by there for the grace of God go I could get hurt, and I would still want to compete for the championship.
Yeah, that was exactly it. I mean, there was some controversy among the longtime fans who have gone through the Richard Petty school of, hey, if you can breathe and you can walk, you need to start that race. But I think drivers recognize the fact that, hey, this could happen to me. And there's been enough instances over the last few years where drivers have said, if I'm in that situation, I know that NASCAR's got my back, and I don't need to put myself in a bad spot. So drivers were supportive of it, and they also saw that Kyle was committed to this. I mean, he wasn't trying to take advantage of it. He literally returned as quick as he could. I mean, he could have sat out a few more races and to ensure that he was healthier. But no, he got back as fast as he could. He put himself through a very intense rehab program, and drivers recognized that. I think that's why they were so supportive of him, getting back in the race car and getting that waiver. Jeff Gordon yesterday and Kevin Harvick, who both lost the championship to Busch, both spoke fondly of Busch and his determination and dedication, and they have no qualms with him getting that waiver.
Is Busch a popular champion with the public? I know he's had some rough spots early in his career, but he's 30 now. He's a family man. Has he matured a lot? Is he a popular champion?
Well, that's a great question, and I don't know. I'm actually kind of working on a story about that now. Yesterday, as he was in victory lane, he was getting cheered. I mean, people were very excited to see him win, but the fact is that as he was, celebrating that victory, he was also throwing candy to the crowd and free T-shirts. So the fans might have had some incentive to cheer for him a little bit. Time will tell with Kyle Busch because, he returned. Fans recognized what he had went through in the ordeal and everything, and they cheered him. He went through driver introductions every week, at least for the first couple weeks. They were very supportive. But gradually, over about a month or so, the boos that Kyle has kind of followed him throughout his career returned. Whether he becomes a fan favorite or not, we're going to have to see. One thing I say, though, is that Kyle wins a lot of races, and drivers who tend to win a lot of races in NASCAR tend to get booed a lot. Fans don't like drivers who win all the time. It's just how it is. It happened to Jeff Gordon. It happened to Rusty Wallace. It even happened to Dale Earnhardt. And it takes a while for fans to kind of warm up to you a little bit. And I think the thing with Kyle is, is he's going to have some struggle. And when I mean struggle, but not besides the broken leg, he's going to have to go through a period of time where winning isn't so easy for him, where, you know, he's not in victory lane on a near weekly basis. And that, I think, fans will kind of warm up to him. But if he keeps winning races like this and he keeps contending and winning championships, he's going to be very unpopular. It's the same thing that's happened to Jimmy Johnson.
Jordan Bianchi joins us, SB Nation. We talked some NASCAR as they wrapped up their season on Sunday, Kyle Busch winning the championship. During the playoffs, there was that incident between Matt Kenseth and Joey Logano where he crashed him and Logano was, you know, lost a chance for the lead. Does NASCAR have to get a handle on that? Because that is part of the lore. It's kind of part of the attraction for a lot of people. But do they have to get a handle on that? Because Logano's playoff chances were destroyed.
Yeah, I think they did take those steps. You know, they suspended Matt Kenseth two races, and that's a big hit there for Matt Kenseth. Two races, wasn't behind the wheel. The fact that his playoffs were over as well. Yes, NASCAR has to officiate this probably a little bit tighter going forward, but I think they sent a clear message. And Brian France, when reporters spoke to him on Friday and we asked him that question, he said, you know, we looked at this as a situation of we actually have to penalize the act of what happened. Matt Kenseth crossed the line. He deserves punishment. But we also have to punish him sufficiently enough where it's going to deter other drivers. And I think a two-race penalty is going to be high enough where going forward drivers are going to say, you know what, we can't cross that line. NASCAR is not saying you can't be physical and you can't bump and bang and sometimes you're going to spin a guy out, but you cannot do what Matt Kenseth did, which is you cannot be nine laps behind the leaders and intentionally take out the race leader. You just can't do that. And I think NASCAR sent that message loud and clear.
All right, that was right out of Days of Thunder, man. I mean, that was
it was out of a movie. I mean, it's exactly out of a movie, and it was a dirty tactic. I mean, it was something you almost expect to see out of wrestling. You've got this guy doing a run-in with a steel chair, the equivalent of it. It was a dirty tactic. It was out of a movie, and it shouldn't have happened. But, you know, it also, as you said, it's kind of part of NASCAR's lore. They've kind of got this mentality, and for this sport is a bootlegging sport that has its roots in, you know, guys running moonshine back in the 40s and 50s, and there's a hard edge to this sport, and sometimes that hard edge kind of manifests itself in ways that are a little bit unseemly, as we saw in the chase.
Sometimes you can't run away completely from your roots, and I think you hit that right on the head there. In terms of Jeff Gordon, I mean, the final race, a fantastic career, 90-plus wins, championships galore. But if you were to define what he's done for this sport, from go back to the early 90s to today, what's the biggest thing he was responsible for, a part of being responsible for?
That's a really good question. I guess to me is I look at Richard Petty, and Richard Petty was a fan favorite, and he helped elevate the sport, you know, from that bootlegging mentality, kind of elevated it up where it had the mainstream appeal. Well, Gordon took that mainstream appeal that Petty laid the foundation for and really brought it to astronomical heights. This is a driver who really almost on his shoulders elevated NASCAR to something that's on the par with the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball. It's a mainstream sport now because of Jeff Gordon. It's a national sport. It expanded out of its Southeast base. It has races throughout the country now. It has national television contracts. And the fact that a race car driver, you know, hosted Saturday Night Live. I mean, that was unheard of. And the fact that Gordon also, you know, hosted, you know, daytime talk shows. He was on the cover of People magazine and other things like that. That's just unheard of. And now NASCAR is a mainstream sport. People know about it. They may not follow it to a high degree, but they at least have some identification with the drivers. Gordon, Danica, Dale Earnhardt Jr. And that's what Dale Earnhardt and Jeff Gordon did throughout the 90s. They elevated that sport just to a real higher level that it had never seen before.
Was he the equivalent at the time what the PGA Tour saw with Tiger Woods, a guy winning a lot, but also you just sense like something big is brewing?
I think that's a really great analogy, and that you recognize greatness, and that not just greatness, but really kind of a once-in-a-generation talent who was going to supersede anything that really had come before him and was operating on a higher plane, and that's what Gordon was. He was a driver who was going to win a lot of races and win a lot of championships, and he was going to be really – he was going to – be a trendsetter, and he's going to blaze that trail, and that's exactly what he did. And, you know, people recognize that talent. And he also had, you know, to the casual fan, it was a, wow, this guy is good. This guy is great. We're going to latch on to him. He brought a lot of new fans into the sport that really had no interest in NASCAR before him.
Jordan Bianchi and SB Nation on NASCAR as they wrapped up their season on Sunday. The chase, real quick, any potential changes, or they like with what we've got out of this?
I think they like it a lot. Actually, I know for a fact they like it a lot. And the fact that the Chase has undergone a lot of changes since it was introduced in 2004. They found a format that generates excitement. You know, Brian France, NASCAR CEO, talked a lot about Game 7 moments and wanting replicating those, which we see in the stick and ball sports. They have those a lot. They've got elimination races now. We've got drivers kind of find themselves in situations where they absolutely have to win races. Kyle Busch is a great example. You know, Sunday at Homestead, he had to win that race. If he doesn't win that race, Kevin Harvick wins the championship, and NASCAR loves it. It's resonating. Television ratings have increased. Grandstands are full now. That's a little bit of a lull where the ratings are down and tickets are being hard to sell. That's kind of being rectified a little bit. And NASCAR wants stability going forward with the playoffs. It's had a lot of changes the last 10, 12 years. It needs a playoff format where fans know from year to year, this is what we can expect. I think they have found that format, and they're not going to tweak it in the foreseeable future.
Jordan, great stuff. I appreciate it as always, my friend. Thank you so much again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. All the best.
You got it. Jordan Bianchi, SB Nation on NASCAR as we wrap up the season. 800-777-2907. 800-777-2907 is the telephone number. It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
This is Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Working the third shift.
This is Tony D.
Once again,
from the Quicken Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
Well, the Monday Night Football game wasn't exactly officiated very well. That's kind of an understatement. I'm sorry I laugh, and I shouldn't, because it should be a serious topic that we need to discuss when it comes to the National Football League, the quality of officiating. But it's just humorous because we as a society, as a football-watching society, can't accept bad officiating for what it is. We just can't. Because here's the deal. Whenever there's an official, and this is really, really prevalent, by the way, when the New England Patriots play. If there's a mistake that is made by the officials in a Patriots game that benefits the Patriots, oh my God, all hell breaks loose. Right? It's either... Oh yeah, they're for the Patriots, or Robert Kraft has got it in with the referees. Or, and this is where it's really key, if there's an officiating call against New England, then you see all of the NFL wants to knock the Patriots down, man. The Patriots need to come off that post. Roger Goodell's always hated the Patriots. Look what he did with that Deflategate. So it doesn't matter which side the New England Patriots are on, the conspiracy theories come out. Now here's the thing. I tend to calm down with all that stuff. I'm not a big conspiracy guy. You never hear me yelling up and down about some massive plot to rig games and all of that stuff. But the NFL does have an officiating problem. The games seem, or at least have the perception of getting worse. There are basic calls that are just getting blown, just completely getting blown. Tonight there was a whistle during a ball that was in midair, you know, making the play dead, and then the Bills got a 15-yard penalty as Rex Ryan was stepping on the sideline and whatnot. It's and then at the end of the game they couldn't determine what was a catch, and they couldn't determine if the player I want to say it was Watkins was out of bounds on the final play. I mean, it was just this back and forth nonsense of we don't know, we're going to check, and that should have been this, and that should have been that. This is going on throughout the league. Look, we've called for this for years and years. Most of us who have seen officials and how they work it, these guys have got to put a little bit more time into the craft. That's all it is. That's all it is. Guys are going to make mistakes. The replay system is supposed to help, but they've got to put a little bit more time into the craft that they do. They're all lawyers during the week, or accountants, or whatever the heck they do during the week. And then they go in and they're refereeing an NFL game that's got complicated rules, and they're going to miss some stuff. Better to figure out a way not to miss that stuff. There's seven guys on the field, and yet they're blowing basic stuff. But there is no conspiracy, and do yourself a favor and save yourself the anxiety. Try to eliminate that from your mindset. I know it's hard because it's more fun to think like that.
I don't understand people with conspiracy theories.
Me either.
Kind of just in general in life. Like, it's just that I just can't wrap my mind around the whole, oh, they're out to get you, or that kind of stuff. I'm like, I can't wrap my head around it all.
No, I can't either. I can't keep up with half of them.
No,
you know, like you
no,
just
you
like
can't.
Like even on the political side of things, forget the sports side of things.
The political side's the worst.
I don't know who I'm supposed to be fearing, right? No, I don't even know who's supposed to be coming after me at any given moment. Like I have a neighbor who's a really, really nice lady. And, you know, she's an older lady and she likes to talk. So she'll sometimes stop by the house when she sees me outside while she's walking her dog and we'll catch up a little bit and whatnot. Really, really nice lady. So I have nothing against her, but every now and then she'll throw like a conspiracy theory out. And one of her ones was on Google. And she said like how she thinks that like Google has got like, they can read your mind somehow, like because she finds it odd that whenever she thinks of something and she begins to type it in Google, somehow it immediately pops up. Like of all the things that could be similar in the wording, that what she's thinking about seems to pop up first. So they must know something. And I said, they do. I said, I'm not. It's not some sort of secret. They have an algorithm,
right?
And they and every time you enter something in Google from an IP address, the Google sort of gets to know you a little
right,
bit.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
get to like the more you use Google, the more it kind of gets to know you. And it's like, well, she tends to like this, and so if she's typing this, she tends to like this.
Google Let's say you're coming into your house and implant chips in your
right, implanting chips to like read your mind,
sleeping,
right?
That doesn't happen.
Like, if I'm like, for example, I like sports. So if I have a tendency to Google names of athletes, right? If I type the word Tom, I am less likely to get Tom Hardy, the actor.
Right. Yes.
I'm going exactly. to get Tom Brady, the football player. I'm not going to get Tom Hanks. I'm going to get, you know, because Google knows. Hey, whoever's using this computer has a tendency to look up athletes. He has a tendency to search athletes. So this is what we're looking, you know, this is what we do. But she easily went down that rabbit hole. Like it was didn't even contemplate the idea
right.
that, and I see this all the time with sports and it stinks because here's the problem with it is that it stinks because if you really do believe games are in the end fixed, then you don't know what place you have as a fan. Like you're really, what are you really rooting for? Scripted stuff? You can't root for scripted stuff. You could be entertained by it like WWE, but in the end, you're not getting a square matchup. And if you don't believe you're getting a square matchup, you're going to check yourself out. That's why I don't like going down conspiracies, because if my team loses, I really do want to believe they made mistakes or they didn't do something right. Or they were outplayed, or all of those things, rather than no, behind the scenes, they were manipulating this the whole time. That's what I don't like. And so I tend to believe that referees are just making dumb mistakes because, you know what, the game's moving quickly and they're not seeing it right, or we're not giving them, they need a little bit more time perfecting this craft. But until that happens, anytime something happens with a bad official, it's never going to be that they're just humans. It's always going to be they're superhuman and they've manipulated this the whole time. Don't give these referees any more credit than they deserve, okay? Just go down the road of, hey, you know what? These guys, I wish they were more full-time officials that spent a lot of time reviewing their mistakes. Because it's crazy. I mean, tonight was... I mean, even the announcers, even Mike Tirico and John Gruden at the end of the game were like, this was a weird officiated game.
And it's not just the NFL. The NCAA's been terrible this year.
Yes.
They've had it 10 times worse than the NFL.
Well, this is what people were saying about baseball for years. When baseball was going to implement an instant replay rule, one of the arguments against it was you're going to make umpires a little lazier.
Yeah.
And that's just going to start to kick in a little bit. When umps know, in the end, the replay will take care of it, they're just off their edge just a touch, and you're going to see the quality. I wonder if just in micro slivers, we're starting to see this with NFL officials, where they just go, well, in the end, the referees upstairs have got this covered. Yahoo Sports Radio.